You know, I love my terminal. I have completely customized my terminal with open source tools like Oh My Posh. I love the Windows terminal. I've been talking about it for a long time. But recently, Warp has launched on Windows. This is a new way of thinking about the terminal, and I'm excited to see this newcomer into the Windows developer ecosystem. I think you should check it out. I definitely push back on a lot of sprinkling AI onto an application, but Warp is really recreating the command line. It's bringing AI and collaboration and a modern user interface to an essential tool. Historically, it's only been on Mac, but now Warp is bringing itself to Windows as a native application. It's a really, really interesting product. I spent a lot of time with the team, personally spending literally hours with them to help them improve their experience. They're really passionate about delivering a great product. I think the experience is really good, and it's a new take on the terminal. I think it adds a lot to the Windows developer experience. And if you maybe haven't been driving stick shift as much as I have, you haven't spent a lot of time at the terminal, and you want a terminal with a modern user interface that lets you talk to it in plain language, you should check out Warp. It's really, really interesting. And I've had a lot of fun running it on Windows. It's out now on Windows. You can get started for free at warp.dev/Hanselminutes. And as a listener, you get 50% off your first 2 months of Warp Pro with the code Hanselminutes. Just all caps, Hanselminutes. And Pro gives you over 1,000 AI requests a month, which is certainly more than enough to do some damage. Very, very cool product. I encourage you to check out Warp, the intelligent terminal with AI. And I want to thank them for sponsoring Hanselminutes. You know, I don't bring a ton of sponsors on, and I certainly don't bring them on as guests, but I thought that this was a cool tool that you all should check out. That's warp.dev/Hanselminutes.
Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm chatting with Zach Lloyd. He's the founder and CEO at Warp. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Excited to be here.
You've been working on Warp for a while. Like, you're coming up on almost 5 years now. I didn't realize that it was that mature of a product.
We started in June 2020. So we started just a couple months into the pandemic.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That was not a plan, right? You're like, okay, it's February 2020. The world is our oyster.
That was not the plan. We weren't like, this is when I had been working on the idea for it, you know, for like 6 to 9 months before that. And then, you know, around right before I decided I wanted to do it. And then it took a little bit of time to get the thing going. And June is when we officially started.
Now, you were a principal engineer at Google. You were a CTO for a while at Time. Yep. When did you come up with the idea? And is that a thing that you had to like did at night because you didn't want to separate it from your day job? Because you know how companies are always like, I own that because I did it at work.
No. So it was my trajectory was I was a principal engineer at Google. And I was there for about 8 years. And then I went and I did another startup before Warp where I was the CTO. And I did that for a few years. And that was interesting learning experience, very, very different kind of startup. And then between that and starting Warp, I was the sort of consulting CTO at Time. And during that period is when I would also spend a bunch of time thinking about like, hey, what do I want to do next? What do I want to work on? And it was then that I decided I wanted to focus on this particular problem.
Mm-hmm. And you founded it in the middle of 2020, and it was done in Rust natively, came out on Mac, super popular on Mac. It's also on Linux. Why for almost 5 years before Windows?
Great question. Windows has been our number one feature request almost since the day that we launched Warp. I think the short answer is it just took us a while to get the product to what we thought of was an awesome state on one platform. And so the idea was like, hey, before we go broad, let's go deep and make sure users really like the product is stable. And then once we felt like we had, you know, really, really solid product on one platform, which was Mac, we started working on the projects to expand to others. In retrospect, maybe we should have done Windows before Linux, but we ended up doing, Linux was the first like real like cross-platform work we did. And then we started working on Windows in earnest about a year ago.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because there's kind of a, I mean, you have to think about startups, startup culture, and the relationships that startups and open source have with Windows and the history of Windows. Like, Windows is a closed source operating system. Microsoft has embraced open source in the last 10 years, and we're kind of all in on open source. But the fact is that Bay Area startups tend to be a bunch of Mac guys and gals.
Yep.
It seems surprising to me, though, that like a billion Windows machines out there and like 50 plus million Windows devs, that is it just because you didn't have Windows expertise internally? Because like you went to the Linux desktop. Both the people who used the Linux desktop got Warp before.
I remember this at Google. It was like there was a big debate about, do we even support Chrome on Linux? Because everyone, you know, at Google, we were doing a lot of development on Linux, and like I think they had like 100,000 users on Chrome Linux, which is like nothing, right, compared to the overall population of Chrome. Terminal, I guess the one thing I would say is in favor of us like doing Linux a little bit earlier was like the terminal, there tends to be a high affinity between terminal users and Linux users. Mm. But to your macro point, I think if I had a time machine, I would probably have done Windows next, because it is such a big population of developers, and it's the most popular operating system in the world. So it's where we want to be. We're building something that we want to help all developers with. So it's overdue.
Okay. So let's back up and give people a little bit of context here, because I wrote a blog post a long time ago about the difference between a console, a prompt, and a terminal. And I think people conflate a lot of these different things, right? Like there's this black square that you type into and stuff happens. Yep. But Warp is reimagining that. But maybe you could kind of break down prompts, consoles, terminals, shells, and explain where Warp sits into that stack.
Yeah, so Warp is a terminal. You can think of the terminal as it's literally like a software program that is emulating a piece of hardware that was commonly used in like 70s and 80s. That was a pretty simple piece of hardware where you had a sort of keyboard input device, and you had like a screen that rendered characters, and the terminal itself would run these programs that are command line apps. And probably the most prevalent command line app is something called the shell, which is an interactive environment. In the Unix world, it's Bash or Fish or ZSH. It's PowerShell in the Windows world. But that's like your interactive, you type text in the form of a command, and that command launches a program, and that program writes text back out, and that text gets rendered on a screen. The difference between the terminal and the shell, so the shell is just a program that takes text in and gives text out. The terminal is the whole GUI that's behind that. So it's like an actual Windows exe or Mac app that you launch it, and it in the modern world runs as its own application. It's no longer a piece of hardware, but it's still basically the same thing. It takes keyboard input, sends it into a shell, takes it back, and then it has a whole bunch of logic around rendering character output in that program.
And then the prompt is often, made very decorative. You might be using PowerShell, but then you're using Oh My Posh, or you're using Fish, and you've added another thing on top of that. And then there's all the flavors of things around it. Like some people add screen, and some people run it all through Tmux. Totally. And then of course there's the low level stuff. It's like, how are we moving the cursor around, and are we using ASCII art, like Turbo Pascal did in the 90s? Like, there's a lot going on and a lot of history. No matter what you're doing when you make a terminal, you've got to support 50 years of software standards as well as the latest stuff.
Totally, totally. So yeah, I mean, just to talk a little bit about some of that stuff. So the prompt is, you can think of it as like the context that the shell is providing to you before you execute a command. And so the most common things that you'll see in the prompt are like, what user are you? What directory are you in? More commonly now, you'll see like, what Git branch are you in? What's the status of your files? It's meant to provide you with like, hey, here's enough info so that when you know what you're doing. In a terminal, you don't have a whole desktop or GUI, so it's a little bit of context. And then some of the other things you mentioned is it's right. There's whole very, very rich ecosystem and history of how do you customize this tool? How do you make it work well? How do you theme it? How do you sort of set up aliases and just make it feel like your own environment when you're working in it.
Now, there's lots of different terminals. There's always been choice in terminals, but as a general rule, they kind of stay inside the box. Yes. You know, if they're going to do an autocomplete, they'll pop it. Sometimes they'll do pop-ups with like ASCII art or ANSI art. Very rarely do terminals break outside the line-by-line style. Warp does completely unapologetically, like, welcome to Warp. We're not doing it line by line anymore.
That's right. So the product approach here was, let's look at what developers are trying to accomplish in the terminal and try to build an app that helps them accomplish those workflows more easily. And let's not be totally constrained by the traditional guardrails. And so what are things that people do in the terminal? Maybe that's interesting. It's like, it's build, test, run. It's using CLIs to interact with your cloud. It's writing and running internal tools. It's probably the most popular platform for that. It's doing things with like Docker and Kubernetes. So it's a really wide range of things. But if you go down, like, or maybe go up one level of generality, it's like you're inputting text, and then you're looking at textual output. And so our thought was like, hey, there's got to be a better way of inputting text into the terminal. In Warp, for instance, like the mouse works by default, which is kind of a crazy thing. It doesn't, you're using like a standard Unix terminal and you try to like put the cursor someplace by clicking, that doesn't work. If you try to select text and hit delete, it's going to delete the character at the end of your line, not what you have selected. And so there's a lot of like very unintuitive stuff, even in the basic UX. And then when it comes to the output, we were like, why should we sort of limit there either? And so we put more structure into it, where in Warp it works, you know, more like a notebook almost, where the terminal knows what command is associated with what output, and that lets you do a lot of things more easily, even simple things like copy paste.
The notebook analogy is a really nice one. It does kind of feel like your terminal became notebooky, like, you know, the you got your peanut butter in my chocolate and you got your chocolate in my peanut butter, to date me a little bit for my Reese's. Like, it knows the input that you just put in and the output that just came out as a result of that are now married into a cell, or what do we call that?
We call it a block. Yeah.
And then that block is an entity. It's a new building block on which you can build the next thing that you're going to do by attaching it as context. And that's exactly the thing. That's the herbs and spices, I think, in Warp.
Yeah. So having that structure opens up all sorts of opportunities that don't exist if the terminal is just a pane of glass rendering characters and doesn't know anything about them. So you mentioned one of them, which is like, well, your last command and its output can trivially become context for an AI conversation. And that's super useful if you're trying to use AI to automate what you're doing in the terminal. It also becomes something like that you can share with your teammates. You can one click, you know, share something you did in the terminal and it'll find the right boundaries of it. Or it's something you can filter over if you forgot to run grep or a filter command while you're using it. So it's a really, really cool building block for the more advanced features that we have in Warp.
I've heard people call it an AI terminal, but when you go to warp.dev, it doesn't say the AI terminal. It says the intelligent terminal, and AI is a piece of it, but it's not necessarily what makes it magical, because anyone could take a terminal and sprinkle AI on it.
Yeah, so we picked the word intelligent to sort of be like a superset of AI. It should be like, we want just like the actual interactions to feel intelligent. And then the other part of Warp is that it does facilitate sharing of knowledge across a team, which the simplest way to think about that is like, if you have a bunch of complicated commands that you use when you're doing Docker or Kubernetes stuff, you can store and share and parameterize those in Warp, almost like parameterized aliases or something that are shared with your team, or kind of like Postman, if you're familiar with that tool for sharing like API calls. So we built in that. And so, yeah, it's not just an AI terminal. It's meant to be like a totally rethought command line experience.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like the clipboard in my life is doing the most work. Like, all I'm doing is copy-pasting URLs or copy-pasting commands. And simply taking something from the terminal and copy-pasting it, you can lose context. It's not necessarily going to fill in completely what you need, but with like Warp Drive, there's more context and you're sharing it with other users that also are presumably using Warp.
Yes.
So there's a richness that is maintained as we pass things around.
Exactly. And the other cool thing is that context is now available to AI in Warp. So if you start to document your team's practices via saving these commands or saving notebooks or environment variables, and then anyone on your team asks a question like, hey, how do I set up this Python project? AI can actually answer by using an embedding of that information. So we started off with collaboration for humans, and it's increasingly becoming context that's shared amongst people and AI, which is cool.
Now, you can be in command mode or you can be in AI mode, but one of the things I thought was cool is if you start typing enough and it's clear that you don't know what you're doing, it adds a little sparkle. So it's almost like if it notices you put a space in there, you must be writing English. But there's something there that determines that I don't think he knows what he's doing. I'm going to help him out a little bit. It's a really interesting take on IntelliSense.
Yeah. So the inspiration for that that feature was actually sort of like these Omni browser bars where you can either type a URL if you know what you're doing, or you can type a search query. Mm-hmm. And so in Warp, you can either type a command if you're like, I know the gcloud command or the Azure command I want to run. Or you can be like, just start typing in English, and we have a sort of natural language classifier that runs on the device that figures out, hey, is this a command or is this actually like I'm trying to tell my computer to do something in English? And if you're trying to do that, we just kind of will accept either, essentially. So you should be able to drive the terminal in natural language.
I wanted to ask a business question, and no disrespect intended, but I heard that you raised like $50 million from a capital company. And I understand that startups have to make money and stuff like
that.
But like, I also am like, it's a terminal though.
Right.
How do you make a terminal a product as opposed to like a public good? What do you do? Like, you owe people $50 million now.
It's a great question. I think the first couple of years, it was probably the number one most stressful question on my mind, because we had a lot of people using Warp, which is cool, but using it for free. And the big thing that's actually driving the business right now is the AI portion of the product. And it's been like kind of an incredible thing for anyone who's working in the developer tool space. I think, for a long time, if you were building a code editor or if you're building a terminal, you should just expect you're not making any money because you're competing against free. There's no marginal cost. And that has dramatically changed in the last year, let's say, with things like Copilot or Cursor, where the expectation now that there's a sort of marginal cost and this incredible value that you get from having AI in the tool is that you pay. And so, we're actually our revenue is growing pretty well, which is super exciting. Where it's like, if you asked me, is that going to work a couple years ago? I would say, I don't know. It's like, it's a big, we were kind of betting on collaboration. Now it's betting much more on intelligence. And then the second part of the answer to this question is like, our kind of aspiration is not really to build the world's best terminal, but it's to build sort of like the world's best place where developers can build software. And so we've picked the terminal as the starting point. I think it's a smart starting point because it's a tool every developer uses. It's a very important tool, and it's also one I think that's been underinvested in. But Warp already does much more than a terminal than you would ever expect it to do. Like, Warp can write code, it creates diffs, it can share knowledge amongst teammates. And so, terminal is what we are, and we are a compatible. I think we're the best terminal out there, but it's also like we're building towards something which we want to be the place where, as development changes in the next couple of years, that developers are being like, hey, oh my God, I can do this from the command line. I can do that from the command line. So that's the vision.
Yesterday, as of the date of this podcast, you came out with a Windows version. So you can go to warp.dev, you can download Mac, Linux, and then Windows. So Windows has launched, you can check it out, and it'll auto-update, it'll keep getting improvements as you run it. What do you tell people, though, myself included, who are super enamored with like Windows terminal? Like, are you now competing with the inbox terminals?
We're competing with the Mac terminal, the Linux console, we're competing with Windows terminal.
Yeah.
I think I would like people to try Warp. I think Windows Terminal is a good product. Like, I've actually recently been using Windows and using both Warp Terminal and Windows Terminal. I think there's definitely some things that are more polished in Windows Terminal at this point, without question. Like, we're bringing our product to a new platform. but I would love for people to try Warp and not just try it as like a terminal, but try it as something where it's like, when you use it, you're just telling the terminal what you want it to accomplish. Mm. And it's a much more agentic experience. And if you need to fall back into writing commands, you can do that. But, you know, to my knowledge, it's not something that Windows Terminal can currently do. Maybe Windows Terminal will build that, but I feel like it can really help developers who want to ship more, whether you're new to the terminal, or even if you're like, you know, I've been coding for a long time, and I basically have completely changed the way that I interact with the command line to just tell it to do what I want, and it'll fix your errors for you. And so I think there's a lot of value for people to try it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, back in 2023, I made a bunch of PowerShell aliases to use AI from the command line. So I would go ?, and then ask a question, or I'd go ?, instead of git. So if I didn't know a command, I would just add a ?? At the end of a command. So like awk ?, or whatever. And it was kind of an aliased way. Like I kind of bash aliased or PowerShell aliased my way into a poor man's AI terminal.
Yep.
But Warp decided that it would not do that at the command line. Your herbs and spices, your magic sprinkles are kind of in the console, in the outside part, like correct, in the Chrome, of lack of a better word. Did you think about doing Warp not as a terminal, but rather as something that could be done entirely in a prompt? And how did you decide the relationship between the outer Chrome and the inner Chrome?
Yeah. So when we founded the company, this was one of the rules I wanted to break was, if it's going to be a more usable experience for someone to have a native GUI to do something, then I'm totally comfortable giving them a native GUI to do it, even though technically it's in the terminal. And that probably, like, I know there are people who think that like we're breaking the rules of terminal purity, but like
rules are made up though, right?
Yeah, my sense is like it's kind of a it does create some problems with compatibility, so it's not without downside. But my goal is just to build a user experience that's going to be the easiest and most powerful. And so I think sometimes having the thing at the level of the actual app, as opposed to the level of like the shell and the characters, it allows for just like a much richer user experience. So I'm actually, yeah, that was the theory there.
You're unapologetically trying something new. Now, I touched on it a little bit. I want to go back to the idea of context, because we are all as a community learning what the expectation is, what the user interface for AI is.
Yes.
And I feel better. I feel less creepy about AIs when they tell me why they know a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you just did something creepy. How did you know that? Well, I knew that because of this attached context. We talked about blocks, but talk about attaching blocks as context and why that's so fundamental.
Yeah, so like if you think about the use cases in a terminal where AI can really be powerful, I'll just give you like one good example. It's like, hey, I tried to, I tried to run this Docker command and I got an error. And so, well, how are you going to figure out what that error is? In the terminal, for the most part, it's going to be printed to the screen. It's going to be printed to the screen as the output of the last command that you ran. And so it's really nice to be able to just be like, help me fix this error, and then just hit, you know, command up or control up, attach the context, and it has exactly the last command that you ran and has that context. It can look at the error and figure it out for you. So having that primitive of attaching the context is really, really nice. We even do this more automatically for people who want it, where it's like, we can detect that, oh, there was an error. Let me proactively give you like what we think the fix is. And again, that's only enabled because we have a nice, concise way of saying like, well, what's the context of the last command you ran? What directory was it in? What were your environment variables? Like whatever it wants to know is there. And the other cool thing, I guess just to tangent for a second, is like if agent mode doesn't have the context it needs, this is Warp's AI feature, mm-hmm. what it can do is issue a command and you approve it and it will give you the context. So for instance, let's say you have a merge conflict that you're trying to resolve. You can type into Warp something like, hey, help me resolve this merge conflict. In agent mode, we'll say, okay, I'm going to run git status. I'm going to look at what the which files that have the conflict. And then it can say, okay, I'm going to look at the diff and figure out what's broken. And then it can generate a diff to fix it for you. So having this iterative way of like looking at the output of the last command to drive the AI is very powerful.
Yeah, like you could overly simplistically just say, well, look at the history, but I could have been doing 800 different commands over the last couple of days. So yes, it's a very targeted way of saying, using these three bits of context, go and do that. But exactly, then you flip this agentic idea on its head, because you're saying, well, any potential command line I could call, from get status to PWD to whatever, anything that it could do to feel around a dark room to figure out what's going on in my terminal, the terminal could potentially call, presumably only non-destructive commands.
So this is where the power really comes in that the CLI has access to this huge number of tools in terms of CLI tools. So you can ask questions about your infrastructure and Agentmob will be like, okay, well, let me generate the command to tail your logs, or let me generate the command to see when you last pushed a server. And that exists for like an infinite number of CLIs. Basically, anything that has a CLI is available as a context source for the AI in the terminal. Now, as far as like the default mode in Warp is that if agent mode wants to run a command, it asks for your approval. There is a more advanced version of this where you can say, like, I'm okay with agent mode running read-only commands. And what it will do in that case is it will run an LLM to figure out if it's a read-only command. You have to trust it a little bit. If you don't trust that, you can also sort of create a sort of allow list, deny list of like commands that you trust. So we're very much cognizant of like, hey, the terminal is a, you know, sensitive place to just like unleash an agent. So we have kind of defaulted towards giving the user control and transparency. But if you trust it a little bit, you can have it like do a whole sequence of things for you. It's very powerful.
There's no rm-f action happening.
No.
It's totally safe.
Yeah, I would never do that.
That would be great. Get everyone's terminal going and then unleash the beast upon them.
Seriously.
And then you allow different choices. I noticed that I updated my Windows version of Warp recently, and then I hit the Sparkle, and it's got Claude. It's got a US version of DeepSeek even.
Yep.
That's pretty... You got the R1 version of DeepSeek like days after it came
out. We're fast. Yeah. We're fast. So we have models from OpenAI, Anthropic, DeepSeek. We're adding these as they come out, and we give users a choice. As of today, our default is Sonnet 3.5, which we think is, for now, still the best sort of like, you know, one for coding and command line, but it's changing. And we're introducing features that actually leverage these reasoning models. So for instance, using like R1 or potentially O1, it actually makes the autonomy more powerful, because you can have the AI first come up with a really well-reasoned plan that you approve, and then launch into that and have something that's not quite so latency intensive like Sonnet execute it for you. But yeah, we're trying to get the models out to users and give them some choice.
Now, I'm a big fan of LM Studio and things like OLLaMA that run a local host version of something like Llama 3.2. Like, what's the airplane mode experience for Warp? I'm on a plane.
So the AI does not work, but we are looking at building local model support, potentially through OLLaMA. I think we've had users ask for that. I think it's a great thing for us to invest in. Pretty much everything else works, though. It's an offline first app. An app where you need to be connected to the internet to use Warp. Basically everything else works. But if it's an AI feature, or if it's like, you know, we have a feature where you can have two people real time collaborate in a session, that requires the internet. But for the most part, things just work.
Yeah. And you've got this actually at warp.dev/privacy. You know, you're not looking at input and output. It's not training anything on it. It is a privacy first, offline first experience, because you don't want your terminal phoning home every 5 seconds.
Correct. So the AI obviously goes to the cloud, goes through these API providers. You have as a user, if you don't want that. So some developers don't want AI at all, which is totally understandable. So there is a single big toggle in Warp where if you're like, I just want a nicer terminal UX, we're totally cool with that. You just hit the toggle and you don't get that. You don't get any AI at all, and there's nothing sent. If you don't want any telemetry, that's also under user control. So the you know, you should think of it as an AI tool for the most part, but we get that some developers aren't. That's just not where their head is at.
Right.
I think eventually all developers are going to want to be using these tools, but there's an adoption curve to it.
Yeah, yeah. The last thing I wanted to mention, which I thought was really delightful, which does not require AI, is the smart completions. Like there's mm-hmm. like 400 or 500 different tools out there, and then Cargo and Terraform and all these things that I can never remember the exact commands for. And you've almost got like man pages built in where you've got like super smart autocomplete that not only tells you like an autocomplete for the next parameter, but also English from the man pages that explains what it's doing. Like, is that like a local database of
yeah, so it's a local database. It's pulled from an open source repo of completion specs. It is something that, you know, we were always kind of like, if you want to go and customize all this stuff, you can. Like, you don't have to sort of use that stuff, but we just ship that out of the box. So if you want Git completion, Docker completion, gCloud, Azure, whatever, it's like, it's there for the most part. And it's not just the completion, like you said, it's actually an explanation of what does the obscure flag do.
That's cool. So folks can check this out at warp.dev. And as of today, the Windows version is out, which is crazy. You can check it out. It's native application written in Rust, now running on Mac, Linux, and Windows. Very cool. Well, congratulations to you and the team.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a super fun conversation.
Yeah, man. We've been chatting with Zach Lloyd, founder and CEO at Warp. You can check him out at warp.dev. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week. We'll be right back.